Parallel Quest is a podcast of Steel Lake Studio. If you want to find out more about us, please head over to our website, steellakestudio.com. The next episode that is coming up here is just full of so much stuff, from stories about playing guitar to good and bad sequels, our main topic, Dragon Ball Z, and we close out talking about board games and Quentin Tarantino movies. This episode is all over the place. It's a lot of fun. We hope you enjoy it. Sit back, relax. Here comes Parallel Quest number 4. Hello, and welcome to Parallel Quest, a podcast where two friends talk about the stories we love and how they've impacted our lives. I'm one of your hosts, Cody Haggard, and alongside, or maybe better said, across the internet from me, is my great friend and co-host, Zach Butler. Zach, how are you doing today?
Hello, podcast world. I am doing great, Cody. Just got off a long day at Chick-fil-A, but hanging in there and ready to roll with podcasting, man. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, this is a good one. Our main topic for today, if you can tell by the title, is we're going to be talking about Dragon Ball Z and specifically our own experience with it. I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But before we dive into that, let's catch up a little bit. Zach, you got some stuff you want to share with us here before we get started.
Yeah, so I don't know if you have or if any of our audience has gotten into this situation before, but I'm hitting a point in my life where I have a lot of interests, but I don't have a lot of time. So I'm starting to pick up a lot of hobbies and wanting to learn new things and start new ventures, but I'm having a hard time deciding on which ones to stick to.
Yeah.
Because you can't be good at all of them, and there's no way I'm going to be even a professional at most of them. But between like board gaming and working out and mountain biking and snowboarding and writing, and the list goes on and on, I'm hitting a point where I think my wife was the one that said to me, she's like, you got to pick like two or three of these because you're going to end up broke and not good at any of them if you don't start picking one here soon. So I'm kind of at a point that I'm like, I don't really know. Like, I know which ones I like, and I'm starting to pick up some new ones that I really like, but I'm hitting a point where I just don't know which hobbies to pick here to be good at, I guess, or at least just be somewhat proficient at.
Yeah. Well, if I could throw in my two cents, I think you should stick with the writing, and I think you should stick with the podcasting. I may have some biases in that, but that's just my own two cents.
That's true. But man, I just got into gardening recently, and I'm starting to grow stuff outside when the weather gets better, and my wife really likes that. So, I mean, I might have to stick with that one just because she loves going outside and having fresh spinach or like tomatoes to pick from, and I'm a big fan of that. So, but I think writing and podcasting, those are going to be staples. Are going to be staples on this list. It's just getting to a point where I'm like, I don't know which other ones to pick. But yeah, if the audience wants to send us a message or an email of what they've done with their hobbies or how they picked just a few to stick to, I would really appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. Just kind of trying to juggle all the things in life, figuring out what do you have time for. You know, I love, so what's nice is at least Haz and I, we both like to watch movies. So we watch movies together, which is good. And then we talk about them and discuss them. And then, you know, I take all that and throw it into this podcast. And so that's a good thing. But like keeping up with reading, I love to read, but it's one of those things where it's like a lot of days I'm just so tired and I can hardly like keep my eyes open through a book. And then I'm currently in the process of wanting to pick the guitar back up.
Are you?
Yeah, I walked away from the guitar my junior year in college because I got a finger injury, and I just was so frustrated trying to reteach myself all of the chords with like a lame duck finger. And it wasn't like it was that bad, but it was frustrating because after my surgery, it took a while to heal, and I just kind of walked away from it for a while. I ended up giving my brother my guitar, And so right now I'm in the process of like looking at some guitars and wanting to get back into it. I've practiced a little bit. When I've been around a guitar a couple months ago, and I was like, I could do this. and so I would. I'd love to just kind of like in my free time, you know, 20 minutes every other day or so, because at least I know the chords and I know things, so it's not like starting from scratch.
Because you used to play, if I'm not mistaken, you used to play the, not the flute.
Saxophone.
The saxophone. Yeah. That's right.
I played the saxophone, and then I played the guitar quite a bit. And then after I hurt my finger, I actually taught myself keys. So I took all of the music theory that I knew and reading music, and I was able to teach myself some keys. I wouldn't necessarily say I could sit down and play the piano. But I could play some keys. Drums. I've been able to play drums for a while.
Oh, that's right.
I love music, but like what I think is the best individual instrument to play is the guitar, because you could just kind of sit there and relax.
One of those instruments too that has a weird like popularity arc in your early life.
Yeah,
like it's not really cool to play guitar in high school, I found, because like, or no, it's really cool. Sorry, it's really cool to play guitar in high school because nobody knows how to play guitar.
Right,
and so if you're the guy that knows how to play guitar in high school, like, everyone's friends with you.
Right.
But then you hit college and then everybody knows how to play guitar, and you quickly become like, oh my gosh, okay, you're the guy that brings the guitar to the campsite, or you're the guy that sits out in the field and plays guitar by himself. Like, you're the weird kid.
Yeah.
So like you hit your meteoric rise like in high school, and then you just plummet once you hit college. Yeah.
Well, and the thing about college too is both you and I went to Christian colleges, and I feel like there is even an amplification of people who play guitar at Christian universities or Christian colleges, because there's in youth group, you'd go on the camping trip and you'd all bring your guitars, you play, you jam out, you'd play C, G, D, F minor a million times.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, A minor, F, the whole, you know the thing.
You play Wonderwall for everyone a million times. You're the coolest guy.
right. But it is one of those things where there is a certain relaxation to playing music that I really miss. And I can't just bust out my saxophone because, I mean, it just blares throughout the house, man. Like,
there's no quietly, like, playing the saxophone. You can't, like you can finger chords and stuff like that on a guitar. You can't whisper into a saxophone.
Yeah. Do you still play it all? Do you still bust it out from time to time?
I do. I actually play a lot more than I thought I would, simply because my neighbor is a music freak. Like, he plays, he's a bass player, but he also plays piano. He plays the mandolin. He plays a bunch of different kinds of instruments. So him and I usually get like a jam session going every now and then. So I find myself playing a lot more guitar recently.
And you know what was, and we can move on from this in a second. I was looking at the, just like some guitars, like some suggested things to buy, because I've been out of it for a while, but still the same brands are good that were good years ago, and the same entry level stuff is good that was the same stuff years ago. Nothing's really changed. For beginners, Yamaha's kind of the way to go. For high end stuff, you got Taylor, you got Martin, all that. But you know, a guy was making an argument, because he was like, a lot of people don't suggest like Martin guitars or Taylor guitars for people who are wanting to get back into it. But he was like, the chances are you spent more money on the MacBook Pro you're watching this video on than you would on a Taylor or Martin guitar, and you could give this to your kids. And I was sitting there, I was thinking like, dang, man, that is a really good point. Like,
yeah,
that's an extremely good point. But you know, it's one of those things, you learn to, once you learn to put a value on something, you're just okay with that. Like, we're totally fine with the fact that a cell phone just costs you $800 now.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, whatever, you got a cell phone, but you're going to get a new one in 2 to 3 years, right? Whereas it's like, you go spend $800 on a Martin guitar that'll last 50 years. It's like, oh my gosh, that's astounding, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't think, I mean, there's a guy at my work too, who, he is a huge guitar player, and I'm not sure how much he plays, just for the fact that he's kind of a shaky guy. He's an older dude, but he loves guitars, and he knows some famous guitar players. He actually knows the lead guitarist for the Goo Goo Dolls. He always tells me that. That's like his in. He's always like, oh yeah, I was talking with so-and-so. I forget his name, but he like talks to him like a normal like friend would.
That's awesome.
And it's really sweet. But so he's kind of got me back into guitars too, just for the sheer fact that I feel like I need to know what he's talking about,
right?
Because I think he thinks I know a lot more about guitars just because I play guitar.
Just because you have one and you play one.
Yeah, but like I have this old Crafter. Like it used to be an acoustic electric, but now the electric part broke, so it's just this like semi-expensive like acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. But he's talking about like, I checked out the Les Paul 50G MP whatever. And I just got to stand up and be like, yeah, man, that sounds like it plays some music. Yeah, it sounds like. So I feel he's kind of got me back into it. But he's the one that like, he's like a collector. Like there's two kinds of people. There's like those who are like us who just, I'll buy something cheap because I just like fiddling around with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're not a professional, you're probably a collector. Like you're someone who really enjoyed music. You really know what you're talking about, but maybe you're not the best player of it, but you're going to buy the most, you're going to buy something that's way better than I'll ever buy, but never play it. Where I'm going to buy something real low grade and play it all the time until it breaks.
Yeah.
But I think he's a collector, man. Cause anyone who owns more than like two guitars and one of them wasn't a Christmas gift, I feel like is a collector.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have, basically you'll have your if you're playing guitar, you'll have your go-to acoustic guitar, right? And then if you have a second guitar, you're probably thinking of either upgrading or maybe getting that travel guitar that you could take with you on trips. But anything more than that, it's like you're like a collector or you're really into guitars, right? You're at the point where it's like, okay, every guitar is tuned a little different. You got different guitars for different types of play styles.
That's how you know when you have a guitar just sitting around that's tuned differently. Like you know there's something a little different about that person, or if they're hanging on your wall. Like I have no guitars hanging on any of my walls in my house, but I play probably 15-20 minutes a day. But if I walked into this guy's house, it would be, he would have a room. It's like, this is my room. Come here. And it'll be just wall to wall guitars. I'm sure this dude has a whole room dedicated to his guitars.
Well, I've been looking into it, man. Actually, wall mounts for guitars are cheaper than a guitar stand. You just drill that bad boy in. They're only like 10.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. It's
they're only 10 bucks.
Material.
And,
it looks so much cooler, man.
Oh, yeah, it does.
You look way more serious having him hanging off your wall than just sitting in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh man, dude, this guy plays guitar.
This guy shreds.
Right. Oh man. So that was a good little introduction on guitars and talking about that. Yeah. Now I'm super excited to get back into it. I think I might have to hightail it over to Guitar Center this weekend,
man,
and walk away with something not too expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something low grade.
So, you know, something middle of the road, something that feels good to play, because my first guitar was just this piece of trash, and, I had it for a long time. It wasn't total trash. It was like, you know, how Gibson used to make the entry-level guitars. They're always changing the name of their entry-level models. Mine was from, like, 2005.
Yeah.
But
the thing is, those strings are, it's like playing, like, corrugated steel, it's just like you're slicing your fingers just to play anything on the entry level ones, because that's what my brother had too. He had a real trashy guitar, but it's what I learned on, man. So everyone's got to start somewhere.
Yeah, and once you learn, it's crazy, because I had a couple of friends in college. I had a couple of friends who had some nice guitars. I had friends who had Taylors. I had friends who had high-end Yamahas. One guy had a Little Martin, which was pretty fun to play. And you definitely feel the difference. It's like, okay, there is a little difference in the sound and how it feels.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
you know, it's just a question of value of whether or not it's worth $800 to $900
That's the thing,
more.
Man. I'm sure as someone who knows nothing really about playing guitars and you notice a difference, it must be exponentially like, this is a good guitar for an actual good guitar player. Oh, yeah. Like, they must really notice the difference. If mm-hmm. me and my like basic knowledge is like, I'm like, oh yeah, this is way better than my guitar.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, well, obviously.
Well, that feels good.
Yeah, this feels nicer.
Yeah, I had the whole phase, you know, in eighth grade, back when, you know, pop punk was huge. I was going to be in a band. You know, I had an Ibanez Geo electric guitar, man, would jam out on that thing. Dude, I could play, like, yes. every Nirvana song and...
every Blink-182 song.
Oh, yeah, man. Blink-182 songs are so easy.
Oh, they're simple, man. They're cake.
But, yeah, dude, good memories, good memories. But before we get into our main topic, we have a little introductory game, and we'll go through this relatively quick. But we want to start every episode off with at least a little fun icebreaker. So this game we are calling The Good, The Bad, and The Never Should Have Happened. So basically, the rules of this game are, it is all about sequels and or reboots. Sequels and or reboots. We're going to name a sequel that was good. And then we're going to name a sequel and or reboot that was bad. And then we're going to name a sequel and or reboot that just never should have happened. Even if it was good or bad, it just shouldn't have happened because the franchise had already lost its way. So we'll kind of alternate back and forth here. So, Zach, we'll go ahead and start with the good. I'll just go ahead and start with my good one and give a brief explanation why. I'm going to say Spider-Man 2. And we are talking about Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 2.
Oh, man. Tobey Maguire. Nickelodeon's Best Kiss winner.
Yes. Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2. I thought of that. It was a good sequel. In fact, I thought it built on the first one pretty well. And it was one of the, it was at a time where sequels were just like notoriously bad within film. And in 2002, you had the first Spider-Man come out. And then 2004, you had Spider-Man 2 come out. And it was surprisingly really good and maybe even better than the first one. And it was like, holy cow, like where this franchise is going to go, the sky's the limit. Then we got Spider-Man 3. We're not going to talk about that. But there was a lot of optimism of where the franchise could go. It was good. I remember like news coverage and like being on Entertainment Tonight and be like, oh my gosh, an actual legitimately good sequel for the first time in forever. Alongside, I think it was like the same year The Bourne Ultimatum, not Ultimatum, The Bourne Supremacy came out. And it was like the summer of good sequels or something like that. For some reason or another, I remember that. And I don't know why, but that's my good one. Zach, what's your good sequel?
Oh, man, that's such a good one. So my good one is, I think, on a lot of people's lists. Mine is The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Star Wars. I think everyone would be in agreement with this. This was the first time that I ever saw a sequel, first of all, because I was young enough to not really follow along too many trilogies, but or series really. Mm-hmm. But this was also the first time that I was like, man, do movies just get better? Like, if you just make the same movie with the same characters, does it always just get better? Because this one was just in so many ways like better than A New Hope. They expanded on the universe more, crazy things happen. You find out one of the biggest twists in all of movie, like cinema history. Like, everything in this movie had it going for itself.
Yeah.
And as a young boy who's just watching Star Wars for the first time and really seeing a sequel for the first time, I was like, man, movies just get better. Like, that's the long and short of it. If you make the first one, the second one's going to get better. And then the third one has to be better than the second one, which... to me, I was like, I don't know how someone's that smart to make an even better movie.
Yeah.
But Empire Strikes Back, I think, is on a lot of people's list. It is, in my opinion, the best of the original three, and it's also my favorite Star Wars movie out of all of them. So
yeah.
Empire Strikes Back is my good.
Nice. Yeah, that's definitely a good one. That's definitely a solid pick. It went through my mind, but I was thinking, you know what? I'm not gonna take it because I have a feeling. I have a feeling Zach might want to take that.
Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and move over to my bad sequel. My bad sequel is actually a newer movie, and this could apply to, you know, movies or books, or we'll leave like TV series out of it. But Ralph Breaks the Internet. So it's the second installment of Wreck-It Ralph. And Zach, have you ever seen either one of those movies?
So I saw the first one. It was in college because it was on a bus trip to one of our baseball games in college. So it was a while ago. I remember it being good, though. I remember seeing that the second one was coming out, but I was surprised because I was like, oh, I guess they have more to the story, or there's more to it, because I thought it was pretty solid beginning, middle, end. We wrapped up. This is a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And what happened with the second one is they kind of made, so the first one took place in like this video game world, added a lot of imagination, had a lot of really good jokes and a lot of really good moments of satisfaction for people who grew up playing video games, especially if you had any familiarity with the arcade and things like that. There's just some really neat things in there, and just and the story was told well. I thought that it had a strong male character and a strong female character. They worked really well in tandem. The acting was really good. The animation, it's Disney, so the animation's always going to be good. But it just, it was one of my favorite movies to watch that my kids liked, you know, because I watch a lot of animated films with my children. And so the first one I just thought was like, well, this is a really good movie. I would sit down and watch this on my own, you know? And then the second one came out and I was like, okay, they're focusing on making a joke out of the internet with these, you know, a series that previously focused on, you know, video games. We'll see where this goes. And basically, to me, it just didn't have the same charm because everybody jokes on the internet as it is, right? It didn't have that same unique feeling that the first one did. It didn't feel like it needed to be made. And overall, I thought that the story just kind of fell short. I didn't really think the new characters they introduced were very interesting. And I thought that the plot did do a little bit too much of like the heavy-handed approach of like, we want you to get this message in a way where I was like, okay, we get the message. You don't have to keep saying it. And and I think heavy-handed can be good, but I also think heavy-handed when done poorly is just, it can really be distracting. And so I thought that would be a bad sequel, in my opinion.
So since it's about the internet, was it really meme-y? Were there a lot of internet memes that they were playing off of? Or
yeah, there were quite
showing?
A few. There were quite a few, and some of them were like really old. And you know, at the pace of the internet, if something's more than a couple months old, it's old. They had memes and jokes and things from a couple of years past. I can't remember any off the top of my head because it's been a while since I've watched it. But I just remember thinking like, oh man, this is kind of old. You know, this is, I mean, even the Ralph Breaks the Internet title comes from that Kim Kardashian moment where, you know, Kim Kardashian challenged people to break the internet, right? That was a long time ago at this point. I remember I wasn't even living in Ohio at the time, which I was, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Wow, they're really reaching back.
Yeah, and I know the movie's a couple years old, or maybe a year and a half old at this point. So it's not like the movie just came out. But
I still might check. I think it was on Netflix briefly, so I was like, I might look at it. But
yeah, I mean, if you don't have to pay for it, it's worth watching. But
right. So moving on to my bad movie here. Mine was more of a bad book. So those of you who remember I can't remember how long ago that was, but the Hunger Games trilogy, when that was all the craze and everyone was all into the Hunger Games. And I remember reading the first book and being like, man, this is different. Really good. It's fast paced. Yeah. It keeps your attention. The characters are good. I could kind of see a love triangle forming because that was kind of the thing to do with young adult fiction. I think it still is, but it wasn't in the foreground enough for me to care. But then we get to Mockingjay, the final book, and it honestly might be one of the worst books I've ever read, other than any of the Twilight series books. Yeah.
Whoa,
so this
dude,
is
one
bad,
of the worst?
But it's bad, but borderline atrocious. I know I can feel the hate already building from those who are huge fans.
That's brutal, man. I can't wait till you write a book one day and people come back and review what you have to.
This is why I will not. I'll keep them all to myself. But I just think the reason why, I think the biggest reason why I thought this was a bad sequel, and it's not the second, it's the third book, but it was so bad because the plot moved without the character being there. And what I mean by that is Katniss would black out. So she would either get injured enough that she'd pass out, or like she wasn't strong enough and then she'd pass out. And then events would happen and she would wake up and stuff would be solved for her. Or she'd have a new problem to do because the old ones have already been taken care of. And I think in my mind, it's a kind of a cheap storytelling device where it's like, I don't know, or I don't have the time. I don't know if this was like a publishing problem where she was like, I have a deadline and I need to get this book out by this date. But it just seemed like a lot of it was rushed, especially it's the final book. It's the culminating act of all three. It's like everyone wants a satisfying ending with like the big battle, but like we want to see Katniss grow. And I think it got to a point where either because of time constraints or something else, that a lot of the book was skipped over because Katniss kept passing out.
Just and, passed out.
Yeah, she would pass, I think two or three times she passed out and big problems would be solved for her while she was knocked out, and then she would move on to the next problem. And that's kind of plot like progressed. And I just found myself, and then there were some things, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but there were some things that happened where I was like, oh, okay, I guess that person is whatever now. So like things just kind of randomly happen. And I get the point of the novels was like war is terrible. War is pointless. And I get that. But you're also writing a young adult novel with like a fairly developed love story with also a fairly developed world that has a lot to offer. I mean, I would have loved to have just had a whole book about like how each of these districts work together, because they all kind of produce specific resources for everybody, which is kind of like a cool, like Settlers of Catan kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I would have liked to have known more about that, or like what the people are like, because they all seem to have like eco specific abilities. And so like all that would have been cool, but I feel like we didn't get that much. We got a more love story that wasn't fully developed. And we got a lot of passing out and problems being solved. And so that just kind of drove me nuts towards the end. And I thought it was just a bad sequel. I finished the book and I was like, that was just bad. Like that did not end. And there's no more. So I was like, that just kind of, it left with a bad taste in my mouth. And so I'll always read the first Hunger Games. I thought it was great. Yeah. Second one, Catching Fire, was okay. It was basically the first one, but a little different, I guess. But the third one just stands out as kind of this eyesore to me. So I picked Mockingjay as my bad sequel.
Yeah, I never read the books, but I rather enjoyed the first and second movie. I honestly, I think I watched the first part of Mockingjay and tried getting through it like three times and fell asleep every time. So it was at a stage.
Yeah, so did Katniss, apparently.
Nice. Oh, man, that was a good one. So anyway, Zach, for all of you Suzanne Collins fans over there, Zach didn't like Mockingjay very much. And if you didn't like it either, let us know, because if that's kind of the fans' consensus, that's important.
Yeah, it isn't. Yeah.
And we're going to move on into our last category, the never should have happened. And my pick is Pirates of the Caribbean 5, Tell No Tales. Pirates of the Caribbean 5, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Now, I want to say one thing about this. There's a caveat about this movie. The movie actually wasn't that bad. The movie itself wasn't that bad. However, Pirates of the Caribbean 3 was not very good. Pirates of the Caribbean 4 was worse. And
can you name all five of them? I don't even know the names of all five.
I think I could. I think it is Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, then Dead Men's Chest, or Dead Man's Chest. I think it's just singular.
It's just all of their chest.
Dead Man's Chest. Then something about the Edge of the World.
That might be it. It might be Edge of the World.
Gosh, something about the Edge of the World. And then, what's the it's got to do with the Fountain of Youth. Oh, man. What was four?
You're doing great.
I'm going to get there. Pirates of the Caribbean 4, the one with Penelope Cruz.
Is that the title of it?
Yeah, that's the title of it. Man, you know what? I really, when I started off, I started off strong and then got to...
Yeah, you were killing it, man.
At World's End. That's the third one. At World's End. And then the fourth one is... I'm not going to get the fourth one. It's not coming. But then the fifth one is Dead Men Tell No Tales. Now, okay. I will say that... At the beginning of the movie, as soon as that movie started, I was extremely skeptical because it starts off with like Jack Sparrow passed out drunk and like they somehow or another take a pirate ship through town. I can't remember how it all worked, but I was like, oh boy.
Here we go.
We're really leaning into the fact that Jack Sparrow is a drunken loser way early on. And that's the reason why I think that the fifth movie never should have happened, because I thought at the beginning of Pirates of the Caribbean, the series, there was this aptitude, this level of, like, Jack Sparrow was a decent pirate. He was savvy. He was tricky. He would come across as incompetent, but it all had to do with this underlying, like, he was scheming. He always kind of knew how people would respond and how he would get himself out of it. Never came across as particularly courageous or anything like that, but he always knew how to weasel out of everything. And then as the series went on, they kind of leaned into this fact that, well, he's kind of drunk and he's not competent at all, and really leaned in the fact that it's more of like a luck thing with him than it was a level of competence. And I was just like, oh, that's stupid. This is a stupid direction to take the character. And so they kind of just made him a walking caricature of a pirate instead of like, okay, this is a cool character, you know? And so I just thought that the character of Jack Sparrow had fallen apart after the third movie. And then they made a fourth one, and that one was just unmemorable. I remember the Fountain of Youth was in it and Penelope Cruz was in it. And there was some, like, man-eating mermaids. And that's about it. That's all I remember of the movie. And then Dead Men Tell No Tales came out. And I was like, you know what? This is actually decent. This one is actually decent, but it should have never happened. And I think a part of the reason why it was decent is Javier Bardem is in there. And I thought he played a good villain. He always plays a pretty good character. He's a pretty good actor.
Oh, he's in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway,
he's a great actor.
It should have never happened, but it turned out to be okay. But I think we can finally say Pirates of the Caribbean is officially done.
Is it?
I think so, man.
Oh, I hope so. I didn't even know there are five, to be honest.
Pirates are cool, though, man. Pirates, I mean, that's the thing. Is like, people are always going to be drawn to a pirate movie because it's not like there's tons of them. But pirates are kind of neat. Yeah.
I mean, I want another Muppets Treasure Island movie. If they could reboot that. That was one of my favorite pirate movies.
Wouldn't be too hard. I mean, no. Treasure Island is a public domain property. Dude, we could make our own version of Treasure Island. We couldn't use the Muppets, but we could make our own version of Treasure Island and not have to worry about too many copyright things.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start looking into that.
Yeah, start that manuscript.
There we go. All right, so for my never should have happened movie, since you picked Spider-Man 2, I thought it was only fitting to pick Spider-Man 3. 2007, baby. 17-year-old me. No, yeah, 17-year-old me. Man, what can I say about the atrocity that was Spider-Man 3? I wrote in our show notes, I'm not sure if they knew they were supposed to make a Spider-Man movie. Like, I don't know if Sony knew when they got the script, this was a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Especially coming off 2, man. 2 was, like, you were right. 2 was such a good movie. It had a right. cool villain. Yeah. It had awesome action. Like, it had a, actually, it made me feel bad for the villain. Like, you're kind of on his side, too, because you understand. So, you're coming off that, and you're like, man, the third one's going to be killer.
And it followed the hero's journey to a T. Spider-Man 2 follows the hero's journey to a T in a way that resonates with the audience. Spider-Man
Absolutely.
3, not so much.
They, because it had so much potential, man. That was the saddest thing. Because you're bringing one of the coolest villains in not only comic book universe history, but like in just villain history. You have Venom, you coming into the Spider-Man universe and the Spider-Man mythos, and like you could just do so much. He's such a cool villain, and he's hardly in the movie. Like, he's at the very end, so you're waiting this whole movie to see Spider-Man fight Venom, or Spider-Man turn into Venom, or something happened with Spider-Man and Venom, but you get Sandman at the beginning, and you're like, what?
Huh?
Like, okay, I guess we'll roll with Sandman. And then you get, like, Goblin, the new Goblin. You have Harry Osborn turning into Goblin, and you're like,
I always forget about that subplot.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense because, like, I mean, it does kind of, but you're doing too much already. You're already you're throwing Sandman at us at the beginning. So I'm like, okay, this movie's about Spider-Man and Sandman and somehow Venom, because Venom was in the trailer. So you're like, Venom somehow has to get worked into this movie. But they're spending all this time on developing Sandman. And then he, like, okay, we'll fight him. And then we have the new Goblin. So Harry finally turns into the Goblin. He succumbs to, like, the darkness in himself. And so you're like, okay, I guess he's going to fight him at the end. And then you have Eddie Brock turning into Venom. And it's just like, okay, I guess we have 3 villains in one movie. And Spider-Man eventually goes emo. And, like, everyone knows the scene I'm talking about.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
Like, the scene that never should have happened.
Uh-huh.
And it was probably the moment where everyone sitting in the theater was like, I wonder if I can still get my money back. Like, I think there was a collective thought.
Where am I right now?
Where am I? I thought we were watching Spider-Man. Can I still get my money? Is it too late into the movie to ask for at least half the money back? Because I went and saw it in theaters with my dad because we had seen the first Spider-Man and we saw the second Spider-Man. And so we're in the theater together, and I just remember we both kind of just the whole time were like, are we, like, do you think this is good? And my dad be like, no, this isn't, I don't think this is good. And some more, like, irrelevant plot would happen, and we turn back to each other, like, are you enjoying? No, I'm not enjoying this at all. Like, this is right. This is actually somewhat painful to watch. And then you applaud when it's over because it's like, it's finally over. Like,
finally.
I suffered long enough. Like, please stop. So I think Spider-Man 3 is better off just not even being included. And unfortunately, it has to be. But if they just kind of came back out and were like, you know what? We're just going to go and burn all the records of Spider-Man right. 3, and it's just Spider-Man 1 and 2, and then we just reboot it.
Yeah.
Like, I think most people would say, okay, yeah, you would get probably like an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, like, for that decision.
Yeah.
So I just, it's such a bad, it should never have happened. Yeah. Never should have happened.
Yep. That was definitely a bad one. And I feel exactly what you're saying there. And it's funny that scene, that notorious scene from the movie, they actually make fun of it in the movie Into the Spider-Verse, that newer animated movie that came out a while ago. My kids love that movie. And awesome. At the very beginning, they kind of do a joke about it, and it just cracks me up every time.
Oh, that's awesome. Emo Spider-Man. Yep. Never would have thought it happened.
Never would have thought it happened. Wow, man, we have talked a lot about a lot of things that don't have much to do with our main topic, but now we are going
to. People
are
like, when are they going to talk about Dragon Ball Z?
This is what makes podcasts good, though, because it's all about the conversation. It's all about discussions and taking them wherever they can go. But I am really excited. We're going to jump into our main topic today. Our story that we're going to be talking about that has impacted us and how we interact with it, first found out about it, is Dragon Ball Z. And Dragon Ball Z is a manga, actually a manga originally called Dragon Ball. So I'm going to give a quick history lesson of what it is, because kind of what we want to do with these segments as well, and Zach, I think you'd be in agreement with me on this, is that even if you haven't read or watched or listened to or whatever, engaged with the stories we're talking about, we would love to at least have you be interested enough in hearing us talk about them and then maybe go checking them out for yourself.
Absolutely.
And so just a brief history lesson on what Dragon Ball Z is. It is a cartoon anime show. That's how most people know it. But before it was that, it was a manga or a Japanese comic that was published in Japan in the late 80s and early 90s by a man, written and illustrated by a man named Akira Toriyama. And he wrote the entire manga. He wrote it sequentially. So he wrote Dragon Ball, which is actually about when the main character Goku is like a little tiny kid. And then he grows up, and that's Dragon Ball Z. And then it kind of chronicles Goku's continual journeys on how he saves the Earth. And so Dragon Ball then, because it was such a popular manga, it was created into an anime, which what an anime is it is a cartoon version, a television version of the comics. And typically anime were extended versions of the comics. So there's actually more content in the television anime than there is in the mangas. The mangas are like the brief story points, and then the anime kind of expand on it a little bit, because anime ran for a really long season. So it would be on every day of the week. It'd be on 5 days a week. And something to note about Dragon Ball Z is it was such a popular thing in Japan that it was actually on primetime television.
Yeah.
5 days a week. Like this is how big Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z was. And it was on primetime television from the beginning of Dragon Ball to the end of Dragon Ball Z, which I think was around 8-9 years. So that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a lot of episodes.
Yeah. It's part of a series called Shonen Jump, and there were other things on it. I want to say, like, Naruto was on there, but, you know, I don't want to add in too much. But then what happened in the mid to late 90s, which would have been the first time that Zach and I would have engaged with Dragon Ball Z, is there was this television network that all of a sudden started to show Japanese animation called Cartoon Network. And if you've never heard of Cartoon Network, I don't know where you've been living. It's like one of the biggest cartoon outlets now. And during the late 90s and early 2000s, it was the stuff. Like all the best cartoons were on Cartoon Network in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so Dragon Ball Z came over to the United States. It was shown as an anime, but the only thing that they had finished in English were actually the first two seasons, so it went through the beginning to what is called the Frieza Saga, and then it stopped, and everyone wanted more, but there wasn't enough, so then they had to go through and redo the whole series from the beginning. They got new actors, and they retranslated it, and they revoiced it, and they got it all ready for English television, and then it had a huge explosion in about 2000, 2001, and from there, it just ran through continuously to the end of the show. It took them a few years, but I just remember my first experience with this show, and then Zach, you can jump in and share yours. My first experience with this show was I was over my neighbor's house. He would babysit me from time to time. He was like 16 or 17, and he wanted to be an artist, and he loved drawing, and he particularly loved drawing cartoons. And he had these awesome drawings of these characters, these superhero-esque looking characters. And I was like, what are these guys? And he's like, oh, this is Dragon Ball Z. It's this really popular show over in Japan. And he had like posters on the wall of it. And he explained to me what this was. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to see this. And I remember like the anticipation of when it was coming back, because it had like a limited run before it was on Cartoon Network, on mm-hmm. other networks. And then it came to Cartoon Network. And I remember when it was coming on and watching it for the first time and being like, oh my goodness, there's so much fighting in this show. This is incredible. And, you know, as like an 8-9-year-old kid, like that's all you wanted. You just wanted to see people beating each other up on television. And cartoons were the best outlet for it because it wasn't real. And so I just remember as a kid, it all started with the character designs, just seeing the drawings of them, seeing the variety of different characters, the different species, the different races, the different places they were from, and just
hair.
Being told the hair, right? It's all about the hair. Every character has the same face, they just have different hair. And just really kind of sucked in. And that was kind of like what drew me into the show. Zach, what kind of drew you into the show? What was your first experience of it?
Oh, man. So actually, so when you mentioned earlier Cartoon Network, the funny thing was back in the 90s, we, at least in our area, near Akron, Cleveland area in Ohio, we had we had our network where we got our cable from, and my family, for some reason, there were two packages, and one of them got you Cartoon Network, but the other one got you Nickelodeon. But for some reason,
oh dang,
you couldn't have both.
That's dirty.
You had to pick one, or it was, and for like an 8-year-old kid, it was devastating to not have Cartoon Network, because when your friends had Cartoon Network, you knew they had the better cartoon shows.
Nickelodeon wasn't bad though.
It wasn't bad. It was good, but they didn't have the action shows. That's what Cartoon Network had in the 90s, was they had all the cool, they had Gundam Wing, mm-hmm. they had Dragon Ball Z, they had all the cool
Sailor Moon,
they had the action, where Cartoon Network had a lot of American-made cartoons, mm-hmm. and Cartoon Network had all the Japanese ones, which all young boys want to see just a bunch of fighting. So
yeah, right.
So my buddy had, and Cody, you know him.
Yeah.
He had Cartoon Network, and he lived literally 5 minutes from my house walking. So I remember the first time I saw Dragon Ball Z, he had already taped like half of the first season. And this was VHS. So
this
some
doesn't
of you
surprise
there,
me at all.
Oh, no, it shouldn't, because this is definitely something he does. But for those of you out who don't know, VHS is a tape, a black tape, and it used to be what we bought movies on when we were kids. And he would buy blank tapes, and he would record every episode. Every single episode, he would get home. He had a routine. He's a creature of habit, and he would record every single episode. And I promise you today, if you go to his apartment in his house, he has like tubs of VHSs with every single episode of all the Dragon Ball Zs that came
incredible.
Out on Cartoon Network.
And we're gonna have to all hang out together one time and just watch a few of those.
Absolutely. I promise you, he has the first two seasons. That's because amazing. I watched all of them with him. And anyways, I went over and he was in the middle of recording when I saw it. And I hadn't known anything about Dragon Ball Z at the time, but it was one of the early episodes in the first season with like Goku. I think he was fighting Raditz at the time.
Okay,
and I was like,
that's real early.
It's real early, real, real early. And I was like, man, this is crazy. Like, there is so much fighting, and this like people are flying around, and it's like, I mean, it's watching like two superheroes fight. And from that moment, and I knew I had a good source, because I knew my friend would record every single one of them, so I wasn't going to miss an episode. So from that moment, I was like, this is going to be my show for right now. And it was great, and it was awful at the same time. It was great because I had this awesome show to watch that had action and cool characters. They were all different. They had this kind of lore to like the universe that was kind of ambiguous at the time. You didn't know much. You just knew these like superhero race came to Earth and Earth looked completely different. And you had this whole thing going on, but it was also awful because I had Nickelodeon. I couldn't ever watch it on my own.
Yep.
And so I would have to get home from school and race over to my friend's house to hopefully catch some of it. And then we would go back and watch what he would record so I could catch up to where I was at. So I'd watch like half an episode and then we'd go back and watch the rest of it so I knew what was going on at the beginning.
That's awesome.
It was so cool, man. It was such a cool show. And I remember too, it's funny you mentioned drawing because I started to draw the characters a little bit when I was younger. And it was just like, it's such an easy character. You could just draw like spiky hair. And I remember for the longest time, I wanted to have hair like they had in Dragon Ball Z, like just spiky, cool looking hair, which obviously you can never get. But I just remember, I remember the whole like drawing phase and everything. And so, yeah, that was my first impression was being with my friend when I saw this and just being in marvel at the, like there were actually action cartoons out there, because other than like Saturday morning cartoons, when you finally got like Transformers or some of the Batman and Spider-Man cartoons on Saturday mornings that were like dad's favorite. There wasn't much action happening over on Nickelodeon. So I'll give it to Cartoon Network Toonami, which was like the block of shows.
Toonami, baby.
Yep. Yep, Toonami, man. That was the segment, man. That's what we would watch.
Yeah, and Toonami was great. And one of the things that I came across in my research for this is there was legitimately a point in time where Dragon Ball Z was the most watched television show on American television. Not really? Just Japanese television. It was the most watched television show on American television. That's how many kids were watching it. And not just kids, like adults were into this as well. In fact, I would say that anime in general, while it attracts kids, its content and material is kind of more geared towards adults. It's pretty violent. It's somewhat sexual, especially like the uncovered, because they had to do a lot of editing and cutting of the original Japanese content because it's like, we can't show this on American television. And one of the things about Dragon Ball Z, and I think this is what makes all these stories we talk about memorable, is not that it was this fantastic story, which I would actually argue that from the beginning of the show, which is called the Saiyan Saga, to the fourth or fifth season, which is called the Cell Saga, till it ends, is actually a really good story arc. And if you can kind of get past, you know, the English versions of Japanese anime and the voice acting and all of that stuff, it actually is a pretty good story. And it has a decently complex character who's very interesting to follow in Vegeta. Very interesting character, because he goes from being the bad guy to kind of an anti-hero to, by the time the series is over, he's legitimately a hero.
Yeah, and he's a good guy.
And he's the definitely the most dynamic character on the show and probably the most interesting.
He was a lot of kids' first favorite, like, villain. He was my favorite character in the show, at least. When I saw it, I was like, this is my dude. Like, I know he's the bad guy, but he always had the cool comebacks and like he was so confident in himself and he would like kill his own dudes just to like prove a point. I was like, man, this guy's bad. I like him.
And to be honest, like from a relating to the character's perspective, is Goku can kind of be a frustrating hero. And this is why, is because Goku, even though he's a really good fighter, he kind of makes a lot of bad decisions. So the main character of the show, his name is Goku. He loves martial arts. He loves to fight. But he's constantly putting himself in terrible positions because he wants to be the best fighter. He doesn't really care too much about his wife. Doesn't really care too much about his family and their well-being. He just cares the most about being a good fighter. And I think that's intentional on the storyteller's part. I think Akira Toriyama never wanted Goku to be this flawless hero, even though a lot of people kind of see him in that lens. I think a lot of people miss the fact that he's kind of a bad husband and he's kind of a bad dad, but he's likable because he's nice, right? He's like charismatic, but he's kind of not really good at the things that he's supposed to be good at. Whereas Vegeta, on the other hand, he's like the bad guy, and you see him kind of get his life together. He actually becomes a dedicated husband. He becomes a loving father. It takes him a bit to get there because Saiyans, their race, they like to raise their children in brutality. Like
the Spartans.
Right. The way you raise your children right as a Saiyan is you don't show them love or affection. And so there's a moment in the show, spoiler alert, where Vegeta has to sacrifice his own life to save his son's life, and that is something that a Saiyan would never do, right?
Right.
So it's kind of like you see that story arc developing, and he's a very interesting character. But
dying in the Dragon Ball Z world is never really dying.
Right, yeah, you can be brought back to life by the Dragon Balls, but...
Which is, I guess we should have mentioned Dragon Balls. Yeah, only once, yeah.
Only once
thing.
By... Earth Dragon Balls, but as many times as possible by Namek Dragon Balls.
Yeah, what the heck?
Yeah, the show's got a lot of like convoluted holes. And complex things.
Yeah, it's got a lot of holes in its lore.
And you know, I actually think it's a really good show. I recently rewatched through it. I think I told you this when I rewatched through it like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And I watched through the shortened version of it, Dragon Ball Z Kai. I got my wife into it. She was real into it with me, and I was like, this is amazing.
That's awesome, yeah.
I married the right woman, someone who could there sit down and watch Dragon Ball Z with me. And kind of, sorry, long story here. So, Zach, how you were mentioning going over to your friend's house and taping them, I ended up having to move 2 times in 2 years, which was kind of tough as like a 10 and then 11-year-old because there was really no consistent friends. So I spent a lot of time in like that gap year watching a lot of TV, playing a lot of video games, and Dragon Ball Z was one of those things that I really liked. And a kid who lived about 10 doors down from me, right down the street, was absolutely obsessed with Dragon Ball Z. We became like instant friends. And so I remember we started watching the show together because he had all the tapes. So back in the day, you know, Amazon didn't have all the stuff it has now. And hunting down Dragon Ball Z tapes wasn't necessarily the easiest thing. In Strongsville, where I grew up, the only place you could get the Dragon Ball Z tapes was at Suncoast Video in the mall. So,
oh man,
you had to go to the mall. You had to go to Suncoast Video, and my friend, he used to special order them. So he would check in like once a month to see if any videos were on order, and they'd have to order them from him. And he'd go and he'd order them. And so,
oh man, imagine doing that, man! Like calling a place and be like, "Hey, do you have this?"
Right? And it's like, you know, this is something that was just normal as a kid, like. We kind of grew up in a time where scarcity of stock wasn't like a totally abnormal thing, right?
I know. Dude, we would like to get video games even to rent. Imagine that, renting video games.
Yeah.
We would go to Hollywood Video, and I had no idea if they had the video game that I wanted in stock when I got there.
Yeah,
just be like, Mom, you need to drive me 20 minutes to this place so I can just hopefully
just check.
check and see if they have it.
Yeah. And so my friend, he would take these tapes and he, all the boxes, when you put them together, they formed a picture, right? The bindings formed a picture. And so, you know, we were young. This, you think back on it, this is like a really dumb decision, but he liked how the pictures looked. So he used to glue them together.
Oh, jeez.
He glued all his movies together because he liked how it looked, you know, when they're all together. So every once in a while, you know, as friends, we'd want to borrow some tapes from him. And you didn't just get one tape, man. You got like the whole block, the whole saga that you were taking home with you. And you better not mix those up either, because if they got out of order, you could be real screwed up.
But man,
it's real funny. But yeah, instant friendships. I remember there was a handful of us who, you know, we'd have sleepovers and just watch these movies and then draw the characters. And like, that was the thing that was really neat about it, was just how it kind of like, it was just a really good superhero show. And that's kind of how I view Dragon Ball Z. It's a superhero show. And in a way, it's like, man, these superheroes are even more admirable than the ones that we have in comic books. U.S. comic books, says they don't run around with masks and stuff like that. They're like, I don't care if anyone knows who I am. I'll just blow them up with a Kamehameha. It's like, yeah, whatever, come at me. Bombs. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the cool thing was just sharing this awesome action series with your friends. And those who got really into it, who would go as Goku or Gohan or Trunks or whatever for Halloween, like, that was just so cool, man, because you get your martial arts, like, it was the most unorthodox martial arts clothing. Like, no one would ever fight in those things, but it was just like the traditional clothes that they would wear, and then, like, they'd be super heavy. I remember in the movie they'd like toss it off to the, or the show, they'd toss it off to the side, and when it hit the ground, like, it's like lead hitting the ground.
Yeah, right, because all the weighted clothing.
Yeah, they have like weighted clothes. Like, it was just so, it's like, it was so ridiculous at times that, like, but when you're 8 years old, it's the coolest thing. Oh man, they're even stronger because they wear 150 pounds of clothing on them. And just the hints at the world as well, because they talk about the Dragon Balls, but I don't know why. Maybe they did explain it, but I didn't really understand what they did until they brought Goku back. I knew that they had to bring him back, and they had to collect them all and everything. And I think it takes like a year. I think the first season.
Yeah.
takes a year for him to get back. So he's training and everything. But it was just cool. I think the reason why the first two seasons were so iconic in so many kids' lives is because the first season just kind of built this whole world of awesome fighters. And they had these crazy powers and they moved super fast. And then the second world took you to Namek, and so it kind of expanded the universe, and then it gave you a bunch of new characters at the same time. And I think they found a good formula of expand the universe, introduce cool, unique fighters, and they all had unique abilities.
Yeah.
I remember Frieza was my favorite villain. Not my favorite character, but my favorite villain, just because just how hyped up he is and how he always plays it cool and he never really tries. And then he could just kick your butt. Just nothing. He was just kicking butt.
And I don't know if you remember this, but the first run of Dragon Ball Z on Toonami, its first Toonami run, like when it came back and was in full steam on Toonami, it actually ended before Goku fought Frieza. Like, it was, I think it ended after the Battle of the Ginyu Force. So, like, no. It ended after the Battle of Raccoon. Like, you didn't even see Goku fight Captain Ginyu. And no. So there was just this, like, massive cliffhanger. And I think it was the next year that they jumped into the Frieza saga.
A year.
And I remember just, like, as a kid thinking, like, oh man, that's like an eternity, because it was like that gap year, right? Like, I had watched it while I was at the one house, and then the whole year that we were in a different house, it wasn't it, like, new episodes weren't on. It was in syndication. It was all the same stuff we had seen before.
Yeah.
And then I think it was when I was in fourth grade, it had jumped into full steam, and it was like, yes, okay, all right, now we're gonna see Frieza get killed, but he's gonna kill everybody first. He just demolished everyone. I remember, like, when he kills Vegeta, just being like, no, come on, he was about to turn good. I know it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Dude, he was such a good villain, and he had just forms too, which was like kind of the first time you saw different forms of these people. And it was just, this was before, does Goku turn into a Super Saiyan in the Frieza saga?
Yeah, that's
saga.
When he first that's turns when, into the Super Saiyan, yeah.
That's right, because he has to power up to beat Frieza.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before it gets ridiculous, where there's like mega ultra phenom Saiyan now. Mm-hmm. But this was the first time that we also saw, oh, there's a higher power level than just basic fighting. Yeah, there's the final form. I haven't unlocked my final form yet. That was cool. Just the different, because then it kind of felt sort of video gamey, but at the same time, the video games were playing off the show. So it was just a cool, all of it was just first time cool concept stuff. Yeah. And I just remember just soaking every minute of it in as a kid, because then I finally, by the time that after the syndication ran and everything, when they rebooted it again to add more seasons, that's when I finally got Cartoon Network. Okay. And I was like, I'm ready there to go. Is. I got it.
See, now
I can watch it on my own TV.
I like Frieza as a villain. I think Frieza is the best villain, but I do think that the Cell saga of the show is the show at its best. Like
hard to compete with Cell.
Yeah, because you had Adult Trunks come from the future. You had that whole storyline. You had the Cell games. You had Gohan becoming all powerful with the Super Saiyan 2. And it was really good. I remember just really liking it. And then when they moved on into, it got really weird after that. I felt like there was that time gap, and then Gohan grew up, and the show kind of came back for the World Tournament and all that stuff. And I remember just having a hard time really getting into that. And even when I watched through it again, whenever I did a year and a half ago, just once it got to that point, I was like, man, you know, this show really does feel
different
now.
Was that after the androids? Was that after Android?
Yeah, so there's Android, okay. Then there's Cell.
That's right. And then I found the Android season just really boring. I could not get into Android. I don't know why. I just, in my memory, it goes Vegeta, Frieza, Cell. Just skip over it in my brain. I don't know why. I couldn't get into them.
Yeah, the androids kind of like, they spend a lot of time just going around and destroying things, but they never get caught by the Z Fighters. And, you know, there's like really any fighting. There's just kind of a lot of moving around. They destroy a lot of things. The plot doesn't really move. And that's the thing we have to remember, too, is like these are adaptations from the manga. I don't know if you remember this, Zach, but when we were, I think it was either junior or senior year in high school, and I was getting the mangas out of the library. So I was bringing them to school and I was reading them.
That is awesome.
And so, yeah, I used to read them Bible class.
Okay, I vaguely remember during the
study hall hour. And I thought I remember showing you one time, but I read through them, and it's like there's so much added for the anime, to get that filler in, that kind of, because at one point the books were being published, you know, synonymously with the show, and it's like, all right, you need to give Toriyama filler in the show so he can have time with the books. And so I think that's a way in which you kind of get that filler. And I think the Android Saga was one of those seasons that in the manga feels really short. Because even when you watch through Dragon Ball Z Kai, that whole portion of the show is just really short. It feels like really brief, like it moved really fast.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, good, because it's just getting to the point, I think, is a good thing. But then, I remember the original run on Z felt a little longer, a little slower, a little sluggish.
Oh yeah, every fan remembers the episodes that is just exposition, just talking, yelling, holding a pose,
screaming,
and then screaming, and then the show ends, and you're like, nothing happened.
And you know, I didn't notice it as a kid, but watching through it as an adult, I see exactly what they did to like extend the show too. When it was obvious that they didn't have enough story content to make the show, they would have like these really just long pans, and the camera would just pan, and you would hear just like grunting in the back, and the camera's just like panning. And it's like you're ready to start the stopwatch at that point, and it's like, okay, are we gonna keep
we're just
doing this?
Wasting seconds here, I see.
So
yeah,
so that's really funny to notice. But man, yeah, I remember just really loving it, and I'll watch it if it's on TV or whatever. I know that they've got a new series on now called Dragon Ball Super. I haven't watched any of that, but my wife and I, after our big Dragon Ball Z binge, we ended up watching like the movies that are prequels to Dragon Ball Super.
The live action ones?
No. Oh, no.
Okay.
I wouldn't touch those with a 10-foot pole. I know they exist. Oof. Never had any interest in seeing it. No, they're animated.
Okay.
And they're...
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, they're part of the actual canon. And so they're like the prequels to the whatever the newest series is called, Dragon Ball Super. And they're actually decent. And me, I've always been a guy, because, you know, my dad, he wanted to be a cartoonist. There was a time in life where I wanted to be an animator. I've always been interested in animation. I've always been interested in specifically hand-drawn animation. And I think when Dragon Ball Z is at its best, it's incredible. And in the Dragon Ball Super movies, like the newest ones, the animation is beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I haven't seen any of the new ones. I was going to ask if they had anything out currently. Because I the last I ever really saw of Dragon Ball was on YouTube. Mm-hmm. They had the Dragon Ball Z, like, abbreviated, which was just, it's not even Dragon Ball mm-hmm. Z at that point. It's just fans making a funny, they make the first season with Frieza, but it's just a funny dubbed over version. And it follows the plot, but they make fun of it. They point out a lot of the holes, and they just like make fun of the characters and how ridiculous they are at times. And like, it's just, it's all silly. It has nothing to really do, but true fans, people who watched it and like have followed it, can watch it and enjoy it because it's just goofy. But that was in college. I think that was the last time I really watched it. I keep an eye out for it, but I think once I have my, like, start having kids of my own, I'll probably, once they're old enough, I'll introduce some Dragon Ball Z to them. Yeah,
definitely, like, in age, probably, like, 7, 8, same age as we were, I tried introducing it to my kids, and they were just off the walls, man. They were, like, punching everything that moved, and I was like, all right, we get, all right, this is
too early.
You guys are a little too young right now. Yeah. But the for anyone who's interested in watching Dragon Ball Z, there is an app called Funimation Now. That is the easiest way to access Dragon Ball Z. You can get it on like Roku or your phone or wherever you guys stream things. We're not paid for this advertisement either, so I don't even know why I'm saying this.
But it sounds official, so keep going.
But anyway, Funimation Now, it is called, if you want to check it out, if you liked what we had to say, as well as if you just want to know a little bit more about it, there's so much stuff on YouTube. There's a lot of fan things. There's, you know, if you want to find out more, there's more experts on there on the Dragon Ball Z lore. We just kind of wanted to talk about our experience with it, and then kind of closing here, like, the lasting impressions on me, it was that I think this was a very fun show, very memorable. And when I was rewatching the show as a grown adult, I was like, I wonder if I still got it. I wonder if I can still sketch these bad boys. And I still got it, man. I can still I can still do these guys, and I do pretty well. I can do pretty well. I could make a, if I'm looking at a picture, I could basically make a carbon copy.
Oh, so okay.
So I got pretty biceps, good there.
Six pack.
You know, just the overly exaggerated muscular features and your pencil's basically teeny tiny by the time you're done because of the amount of shading you have to do.
Right,
all those
right.
things, but no, it's I still got it, man. What about you, man? What are your lasting impressions on Dragon Ball Z?
It is something that whenever I see it out in the wild now, I'm glad that that person has it, because I'm like, okay, like, we shared that. Like, that came out at a time when we were young and could really, like, young boys could really appreciate it. Even now, when I see things, it makes me happy because it takes me back to being 8 years old and watching VHSs at my friend's house and drawing pictures and being super excited for the reboots and getting Cartoon Network. It made like coming home and watching TV really exciting, which I can't say I have done ever since then. So it was a unique time, I think, in both animation and cartoons and television to come home and be pumped that you're about to watch Dragon Ball Z.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and then it turned into, we got video games from it, and I've played some of those, which are fun. I remember the first one that came out, it was called Budokai, the first one that came out in the States. There was tons that came out over in Japan. But the first official one we got over in the States, I think, was Budokai. And man, me and my friends, we were just like, all right, who's going to get it? Who's going to buy it? And of course, it was the guy with the tapes who bought it. And remember, we just went over his house every day and just played this game, man, because it was like that power fantasy. That's what Dragon Ball Z is. It is a stereotypical power fantasy.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you get to play in the game with the characters you love, whether it's Goku, Vegeta, if you like Krillin, if he's your guy, whatever.
don't hate on my boy Krillin.
Then I just remember we played for hours, man, and just like have so much fun with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, those games were awesome. I mean, it was bound to be an awesome video game, just huge muscular men just fighting. It was cool. It was always cool.
So be sure to check out Dragon Ball Z. If you are a fan and you didn't like anything that we had to say, we're so sorry. I didn't mean to disappoint anybody, but I feel like we did it justice. And like we kind of focus on here, we're more about sharing the stories about how it impacted us rather than giving a critique or a review. There's a million other people doing that out there on the internet, and they're probably doing a much better job than we could do. When it comes to reviews and stuff like that, I'm just too friendly. Like I see the good in too much, so I'm not a great reviewer because I'll even say the worst of things are okay.
You didn't have much to say about my Spider-Man 3, so.
Well, Spider-Man 3, I went through this phase where I was like a Spider-Man 3 apologist, where I was like, you know, it's not that bad, right? And me and a friend in college were like, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as we remember. Granted, I had not watched it in, you know, 2-3 years. We're like, we're going to watch all of them. So we watched 1, great, 2, great, 3 is like, okay, we got to be honest. This movie is not good.
Thank you. Yes. Come to our side.
So thank you guys so much for tuning in. This is, we're not closing up yet. We have our closing segment, which Zach is going to lead us out with, which is going to be, I think, relatively quick here. So Zach, what are we talking about in our closing segment?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about what are we currently playing, reading, watching. This, I think, is just a segment to get people interested maybe in stuff that we're interested in at the moment. Maybe you have that moment where you're like, oh, hey, I like that thing too. So for me, I recently played the board game Spirit Island this past weekend. It was my first time playing a relatively newly released board game. I've been playing a lot of Power Grid.
And can I interject here just for 1 second?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is crazy ironic that you're talking about this, because a week ago we did Christmas at my dad's house and my brother was telling me how he just played this game too. Anyway,
no way.
Keep going.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sure he enjoyed it. It's a cool game. The mechanics are really cool. It's a blend of worker placement / card powering up, I guess you could say. You draw cards that power up your spirit, who you play as, and then you place little tokens on the board to fight against what are called like the invaders, or they're like these townspeople. But the coolest thing that I enjoyed about it, other than the art's beautiful in it, was you play from the perspective of like the natives. And it's one of those things where you never really think about when you're playing the game, because you're usually the guy going into the area and conquering the land, especially on worker placement game. And so the cool thing was, well, we're playing from the perspective of the people that get invaded, and now we're fighting back along with the help of some of the other natives on the island. And so it was a cool game. I don't know if I'll pick it up, because it's a 2-hour board game, and I don't really have any immediate friends that really enjoy game, at least in Pittsburgh area, that enjoy playing 2-hour long board games. My immediate friends are more of the 25 to 30 minute board game people. But it does have a 1-player option, which is unique and cool. I think a lot of board games now are testing those waters mm-hmm. because they know a lot of people love the hobby, but maybe don't have a person that is as enthusiastic about it as they are. So they need that one player option. So I would give Spirit Island, if I even had a rating system, I would give it a 4 out of 5. Nice. It was a fun game. Definitely would want to play it again and would recommend it to others.
How was the learning curve? Would you say on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the easiest, 5 being the hardest, how hard was it to learn?
I think it probably starts out at a 4.
Okay.
But once you play a couple rounds, it drops to about a 2.
Okay.
It's the same stuff. It's the same mechanics over and over again. There's not too many options to pick from. So it's not like a game like Terraforming Mars or it's not like, I'm trying to think of an easier one. I don't know. There's just not too many options. You only have really 3 to pick from. And it's just within those card draws that your game expands. Yeah. So the map's really small. It's not confusing to figure out where you need to go, where the threats are. So I would say it probably starts pretty confusing because your person, your spirit you play as has special abilities, which I constantly forgot in my game. And they have kind of this cool element system where when you draw cards, not only do they have abilities and costs, but they have like an element associated with them. And if you collect certain kinds and combinations, you unlock special abilities on your spirit. Nice. Which kind of adds another level of complexity to it. But you don't have to play that way. You can keep it basic and probably still win the game. So I think it starts off fairly difficult, but I think it's 3 rounds in, you probably have the hang of it.
Okay. Yeah, it seems really neat. I think that, I'd really like to get it to the table. Recently, I just hit an accomplishment. And for anybody who's a board game person out there, you'll understand this. Sometimes you get more games than you ever finish. And I recently got to a point where I have at least played and completed a game of every game in my board game collection. So
that is awesome.
So the only one that was hanging over my head was Terra Mystica. I had it for a long time, never got it to the table. Got to play it over Christmas with my brothers and a couple of friends 2 times. It might be close to the top of my list now. That game is phenomenal. Terra Mystica.
I was going to ask you. Yeah.
Yeah, man, you we're going to have to play together sometime.
Yes.
I absolutely know you would love it.
Yes.
And then also my wife and I have been playing a little bit of Agricola together, which
is a
great game. Have you played Agricola?
Yes, I love Agricola. Yes. That's a great game.
It is fantastic. Anything Uwe Rosenberg, that also has a one player variant, might be. See, now that might be a good thing for your collection because that might be something that you and your wife could play together. I think with 2 people, it plays really well because, especially like as you're learning, you can kind of like talk to each other and help each other out. Because I kind of view it more as a game of like you're competing with trying to get your own best score rather than to beat everybody
else. Beat the other player. Yeah,
you
exactly.
Because there's just so much complexity in that game that there's always going to be people who grasp it more than others.
Right.
So if you can just kind of be competing against your own best score, then I think you're onto something there. But man, that sounds really fun.
I highly recommend it.
And then for me here, something I recently watched, I actually want to mention 2 things here because I forgot to mention it up top. Went to go see the movie Spies in Disguise with my kids, and that was so fun. The movie itself was pretty funny, and it was just so fun to see my kids love it so much. Like, that's what animated films can just do. They can draw kids in, take them on these awesome adventures that are beautiful and wonderful. Like modern animation, man, it's just so cool.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've noticed in animated movies is every animated movie has like an obligatory water scene. Like for some reason or another, they've got to have something splash into water. They've got to show water in some way, shape, or form because it's like, look at how good we can animate water. Because when you think about it, it's one of those things where it could be kind of tough to animate. They probably have a program now that they can at least kind of plug and play something with the motion and stuff. But I remember back in the day, water used to be one of the hard things to animate. And something that I watched big kid-wise was I just watched with my wife Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm. Have you seen that yet, Zach?
No, but I love Quentin Tarantino. Okay.
Tarantino is a guy, and I'll say this about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. If you don't typically like Quentin Tarantino movies, you probably wouldn't like this one either. But I actually thought this one was very good. I like character-driven stories. I like stories that give you a setting, and they're not trying to tell a story over a long period of time, but rather giving you a short amount of time that they're really just focusing on these specific events that happened in these characters' lives over this day or two period. And that's kind of like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is. Now, there's some flashbacks and things in there to give some story background and some time jumps. But I just thought, man, like Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt just really delivered in the movie. And it was like, oh, man, you just, if you like Tarantino, Zach, you got to see this movie. And I'm not going to give any spoilers away, but everyone knows how Tarantino movies conclude, that there's mm-hmm. some type of violence in them, right?
Yeah, it's always a big scene.
So you always know it's coming. And the thing about it is, it every time I see a Tarantino movie, I'm just kind of blown away with how he can just make brutality hilarious. Like you can be watching something brutal happen, but you can also kind of like chuckle a little bit while it's happening, because it just makes it ridiculous, right? Because he's like this B movie loving nerd, and and he understands that people would sometimes laugh at like the horror or gore in those movies, so he just leans into it, right?
Kinda,
he's like, laugh along with me. And I really enjoyed it. I definitely think it's worth the time. It is a little longer. It's like 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Okay.
But enjoyed it. Thought it was good. I think I'm going to watch it again, because it was one of those things where it was like $6 to rent or like $11 to own. And I was like, ah, whatever. I'll just own it and I'll watch it again. Anyway,
that's awesome.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has my recommendation. If you have children or small little ones, do not put it on while they're awake. And
Or any Tarantino movie.
Any Tarantino movie, really. I think that it's, I don't know. I don't know where I would rank it in the Tarantino films. Probably somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
But I've never seen Reservoir Dogs or Hateful Eight. So I haven't seen either one of those, which I've heard Reservoir Dogs is really good. And a lot of people seem to believe that Hateful Eight's probably Tarantino's worst movie. But I haven't seen it. So I wouldn't know. Have you seen Hateful Eight?
I haven't seen Hateful Eight. I have seen Reservoir Dogs, and it's really good.
Okay.
It might be his best.
His best? Okay.
Maybe not his best. Maybe Kill Bill.
You think Kill Bill's his best?
I think Kill Bill is really good. I love samurai stuff, so
yeah.
He had me from the concept.
I like Pulp Fiction, and I think that's like the crowd favorite.
I concede. I will lead to Pulp Fiction, but Kill Bill, it's just so cool. It's a cool movie, cool characters. I love swords and fighting and like samurai, so
yeah.
But Pulp Fiction probably.
Django Unchained is up there for me too. And I know there's kind of a divide amongst how people feel about that movie, but with Django, I just feel like Jamie Foxx, Leonardo DiCaprio, Christoph Waltz, they all deliver just great performances.
Yeah. And it's a good movie. He kind of, it bored me a little bit in the middle until they finally got to Leonardo DiCaprio's character.
Yes.
So that's probably why I would put Django Unchained lower on my Tarantino universe list, just because he really drags in the middle until he finally gets to the end there. But you should definitely check out Reservoir Dogs, dude. It's got some really cool dialogue. He's a master of building suspense when you don't even know that the suspense is building until you're in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh man, like this just got real. And I didn't even know it was going to.
Yeah. I mean, there's a part in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where there's just suspense and tension at the same time. Mm. And, you know, you can't say too much about it. The one thing I'll say is if you really want to appreciate that movie, brush up a little bit on your history of the Manson family and Sharon Tate. Just Wikipedia, those two things.
I read the book, man. I'm ready to go.
And you will have, you'll either appreciate the movie or you'll absolutely hate it. I know there's some people out there who absolutely hate what he decided to do, and I can understand that, but I thought it was magnificent in its own, you know, disgusting kind of way.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's all I'll say before I end up just giving away the movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's it for me. Zach, you have any final closing thoughts you would like to say before we head out?
Once again, just thank you for listening, everybody. It means a lot to us that you're going to sit through an hour plus of a couple guys nerding out about their favorite stories and their memories. And hopefully you guys got some good memories and stories from us talking about it. But it does mean a lot. And thank you guys so much for listening.
All right, we're going to hit you guys with the music and we'll be out of here. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Parallel Quest. Please be sure to head over to our website, steellakestudio.com, where you can give us your feedback in the community tab. Special thanks to Jake Butler for providing our bumper music, and we'll see you all next time.